Morning, everybody, and thanks for joining the fellowship this morning. As you know, St. Andrews has worked and supported the HopeLink Food Bank for a number of years. But HopeLink, one of the great things about HopeLink is that they have many more services to help people who are trying to get out of poverty beyond just the food bank. So this morning, I'd like to welcome Kenny Fox, who's the Senior Development Manager for Individual Giving at HopeLink, to give us more of an update on what's going on at HopeLink and the various things that they do. So welcome, Kenny.
Thanks, Dick, for the introduction. Good morning. Thank you all for having me here. This is actually my first time, I think, at this location. So yeah, thank you so much for inviting me. And I'm looking forward to talking more about how HopeLink has partnered with our community and how you have partnered with HopeLink to essentially allow us to partner with our clients. So yeah, I'd love to start the presentation whenever we have a chance. And I think I will start with just a small bit of history of HopeLink. One thing I've found was a lot of people don't actually know how HopeLink initially got established on the east side and in King County and Snohomish County. So I'm going to start here and we'll see if it works. Okay, so there's going to be time at the end for questions as well. But I will say, if you need to either write down a question or anything, but please feel free to save them for the end. So our vision at HopeLink is to have a community free of poverty. Now, our mission in the sense is to promote self-sufficiency for all members of our community. We help people make lasting change. And that self-sufficiency is a key word for us at HopeLink in how we partner with our community to assist them to exit poverty. It's not just exiting poverty, it's stabilization, which moves to exiting from poverty. There we go. So our history. Since 1971, HopeLink has served homeless and low-income families, children, seniors, and people with disabilities in King and Snohomish counties, providing stability and helping people gain the skills and knowledge they need to exit poverty for good. In 1971, that was not a random year for HopeLink to be established in our community. I like to always add this picture. Raise your hand if you remember this or have read it in the news. So April 16th, 1971, Boeing let go roughly 60,000 employees. Incredibly difficult for the community at that time. The same year that happened is when HopeLink was established. HopeLink grew out of tough economic times. In 1971, it was a group of laid-off Boeing workers helped each other find jobs, creating initially the North Shore Job Referral Service. A group of employees were all laid off, and immediately they were like, how am I supposed to support my family? How am I supposed to be a part of my community if I can't pay my mortgage, if I can't put food on the table? A group of laid-off employees came together to create the North Shore Job Referral Service, which was initially just about referring people to jobs, any job that they could get at the time. Later, they were able to establish and open a food bank in North Shore and help people find rides to medical appointments. It was obvious that you couldn't just have job referral services at the time. People still needed to get to their medical appointments. People still needed to put food on the table. And it was that idea of this is an interconnected web of issues in our community that we need to make sure are provided. It was realizing as you continue to grow out from not just job referral, but food, housing stability, transportation services, energy utility assistance. So things continue to grow in the 70s. HopeLink administration remained in Bothell until moving to Redmond in 1992. I want to point out, there we go, in the 1980s, we became a community action agency and had a name change to Multi-Service Center of North and East King County. This is when we really were able to begin to establish more of our programs which I'll go over shortly. Also in the 1980s, we opened service centers in Kirkland, Bellevue, Redmond, and Snow Valley. We began to expand greatly to all the different areas outside of Seattle. And then we began to expand to include housing, emergency shelter for families and single women, transitional housing for families experiencing homelessness. The 1990s became the first Medicaid transportation brokerage serving King County. Within 3 years, transportation served more than 25,000 low-income elderly and disabled clients annually. And something to point out about our transportation services, which, again, I'll get into more in-depthly here in a second, but the first Medicaid transportation brokerage serving King County, we still have an independent brokerage service that we do with independent contractors that serve all of not just King County, but the entire county of Snohomish. Our transportation serves both King counties and also all throughout Seattle. A good thing I always like to say is most hospitals in Seattle know about HopeLink. My wife is a nurse there, and she has to use HopeLink's transportation services almost weekly for a lot of her patients to be picked up from the hospital for free to taken back to their home, which could not have a bus route or transportation services that they could provide for themselves. As we continue to the 90s, we opened two more transitional housing facilities in Redmond. If you've been to Redmond and passed through the Avondale area, we own some property over there for many of our clients. We raised $10 million in the 1999 Raise the Roof capital campaign to provide services in the Bellevue Service Center. If you've been to our food bank in Bellevue, that was the first one placed in Bellevue itself. Then we did the HopeLink Place Housing, also located here in Bellevue. And then the Adele Maxwell Child Development Center, which is now leased to Sundance. In the 2000s, the fourth decade began with a final name change to HopeLink. Many people ask, how did that name come around? But it quite literally has to do with the multiple links of services that we have in providing hope and stability for our clients to partner with them to be able to exit poverty. Then we opened a new Bellevue Service Center, which is the current one, and opened the first service center in Shoreline. Merged with Eastside Literacy to begin offering adult education programs. And again, I'm about to show you all of the different programs that we do that HopeLink can provide. From there in the 2000s, we opened 101 additional units of transitional, emergency, and permanent supportive housing. We won the HCA brokerage contract renewal for King County and added Snohomish County. That's when we began to be able to provide transportation services for many of our clients in Snohomish County. And then began a grocery store food bank in the Kirkland North Shore Service Center. In the 2010s, we updated our strategic plan and theory of change. And that theory of change is very critical to all of the work that we do. And I'm going to be going over that in a second. We are able to produce our first comprehensive community impact report. So a lot of the numbers I'm going to be showing you today comes from that annual impact report that we send out every single year. And then we're able to raise $20 million in the campaign for lasting change, which through that we were able to remodel our Kenmore Place family shelter, built and open a new Shoreline Center, and built and open the new Redmond Center. And HopeLink today. So HopeLink is the largest social services agency in North and East King County. We cover the community services themselves, covers 800 square miles in North and East King County from Shoreline to the Cascades, from Bothell to I-90. We have the transportation direct operation serves anyone in King County. And then our transportation NEMT, which is non-emergency medical transportation, customer service center serves both of those counties, both King and Snohomish. That's basically being able to provide rides for our clients who, let's say their car breaks down. They don't have that $1,000 that they need to be able to fix that transmission. How are you supposed to get to your medical appointment for a checkup? How are you supposed to get to those essential critical medical appointments that's coming up in a month? We're able to go to their houses directly, pick them up, take them to their medical appointments, and then bring them back home. Again, that's just one area, for instance, if you can imagine. Think that you have food. Think that you have a home. Think that you have a job. Your car breaks down and you live out in Carnation, or you live out in Snow Valley, or areas outside of areas even here in Bellevue. And you work somewhere in Seattle because that's the only place you could find a job. It's easy to slip the second that you're fired from that job or let go because you have no way to get there. Or let's say you have no way to get to your medical appointments, in which your medical bills then begin to pile up. It's easy. You're going to be seeing a pattern here where it's easy for our clients to slip into that area of poverty. And it's so incredibly difficult to get out of it. So, HopeLink centers. You may be familiar with the Bellevue one, but we also have our Redmond, our Shoreline, our Snow Valley, and our Kirkland North Shore. All of these service centers are where many of our case managers meet with our clients. Due to the pandemic and due to COVID, many of it is all virtual if possible, but if not, it's finding a neutral meeting space that's COVID safe for them to be able to meet with their clients. But all of these centers not only are where our case managers reside, it's also where all of our food markets are. And that's a key word there, market instead of food bank. And I'll get into why we changed that term for it in a second. So I wanted to throw this in because I think it's pretty relevant to what's been going on the last few years. Americans faced a difficult year due to COVID-19 to the pandemic, which put a strain on many families' finances. More than half, 51% of Americans, have less than 3 months' worth of emergency savings, according to a recent survey. For 2021, 25% of survey respondents indicate having no emergency savings at all, up from 21% who said they didn't have any in 2020. Another 26% say they have some emergency savings, but not enough to cover expenses for 3 months. The pandemic has just increased the amount of scarcity in resources that our clients have. If anything, one thing that has been great, I work in fundraising. I work with many of our individual donors. One thing that has been absolutely phenomenal has been the increase of funds over the last 2 years that many of our individual donors have given to all of our locations. We have had a large increase of need from our clients would be an understatement, and our budget continues to grow because we are trying to meet those needs. As we continue, and as this pandemic hopefully comes closer to an end, there's going to be even more a cascade of effects that's going to continue to affect our clients for years to come. Low-income households are much more likely to not have adequate emergency savings, the survey finds. Among households earning less than $50,000 a year, only 35% of respondents say they feel secure with their level of savings, while 62% of households earn over $50,000 annually say the same. The pandemic didn't help. Just 1 in 6 households have report having more emergency savings now than prior to the pandemic. That means 5 out of the 6 households have less than they did before the pandemic hit. And I wanted to throw up this graph, and it may be hard to see here in this room. It might be easier to see on Zoom. But I wanted to go over, or I just wanted to show you a brief look at the cost of living in our area. You can see here on the left, we have overall cost of living, and it's a U.S. average is 100. A U.S. average is that light, the lightest pink possible. That's and that is 100. The darkest red is on the U.S. average. You can see Bellevue, Redmond, Kirkland, Seattle. All of those cost of livings as of 2021 are in the deepest red, showing how skewed, especially our area, when it comes to the cost of living is. And this isn't just for myself or for us in this room, for our clients who are also trying to afford find affordable housing, not just within our housing that we can provide, but our goal is to eventually have our clients be equipped with the skills that they need to exit all the programs of HopeLink to be able to sustainably live and have an increased quality of life. The cost of living over here, the U.S. average they put on is 100. And this is in Washington and then in Bellevue. Go on down to housing. It is almost four times as high as the U.S. average. You look at the average, a median home cost, roughly $300,000 in the U.S., in Bellevue, $1.1 million. This is what many of our clients are facing. Many of them have to live much further out than where their jobs are located, than when their children can go to school. Hence the difficulties of finding transportation, finding employment, finding food. Is anyone here familiar with the term food desert or food swamp? So a food desert is essentially a location where there's no a lack of availability to fresh fruits and vegetables, a lack of availability to grains, to dairy, to meat produce. It's a lot of what we might see in a convenience store when we're stopping at a gas station. Chips, donuts, things that we all like to eat, but in many places in not just Washington or Bellevue, around the United States itself, sometimes it's the only thing that they can find to eat. And then I also include the term food swamp, which is a very similar thing to a food desert, but it's not just a lack of healthy fruits and vegetables. All you may have around you is a McDonald's. All you may have around you is a KFC. All you may have around you. And those are easy things for us to be able to go to and get. But when it's the only option, how eventually after years of that diet does your health decline? And that all of these things coincide each other when we're working with our clients. So this is one of the most important documents I think we have at HopeLink to give a good understanding of how our programs work and are interconnected with each other. And I'll just go over them real quick here. So we have a theory of change in order for us to assist and partner with our clients. Now, I always give the example when I moved to Seattle. My wife is a nurse, and I have always worked in the nonprofit sector. I worked in Philadelphia for many years, and when we were moving, we decided to just completely change our lives. We sold our cars, we quit our jobs, and then we outfitted a van to move out here. When we were on our way out here, my wife, of course, got a job as a nurse on the phone at Virginia Mason Hospital. I mean, it was that quick, and that was before the pandemic. I got out here, and it was much more difficult in the beginning for me to find a job. My wife was the sole provider of our income, providing housing. Of course, I had savings, so I was able to provide things for food. But how am I supposed to look for a job if I don't have a place to live? I think a lot of people think of the basic needs we need just to support our family, just to support ourselves in being successful to exit poverty. You need those basic needs of stability first. So many of our clients come here to access our housing, our food and nutrition, and warmth, heat and clothing, utility bills needing to be supplemented. How are you supposed to not let the stresses of where you're going to sleep the next night when you're trying to work on a resume at the library in order to try and get a job? There are many things that we need to have stabilized first before we can begin to work on employment and resources and resiliency. Many of our clients come to us who have those things. We work in the employment services as well. So we're helping with building resumes. We're helping with GED training. We're helping with English for work. All of these areas are critical to provide stability and self-sustainability for our clients to exit poverty. But you can't do those things without a home. You can't do those things without food. You can't do those things if your heat's turned off because you can't keep up with the bills. That was, if I could have been in a position where I came here and if my wife didn't have a job to pay for the housing at the time, there's no way I could have just been popping around and couch surfing with friends just to continue to look for a job and not have a sustainable place to live. So once those basic needs are secure, we move on to other areas like basic financial resources. Balancing a checkbook. It's a lot harder for people who are under a lot of trauma and a lot of stress to be able to put money into savings. When you receive that money, it's a lot easier to go out and use that money to buy things that you think you need almost immediately. Savings is a very difficult understanding for a lot of people, not just in our area here, but around the world. So we have case managers who work with them to help learn how to, like I said, balance a checkbook, how to put money into savings, how to, once they have a job, use those different resources to provide for retirement. We do debt and credit management. We help with legal problems. And all of these areas, jobs and life skills, these are all things that can be taught. And as long as our clients are open to learn, it's what many of our case managers do every day to assist in a lot of these different areas that they may need help with. So you can see direct services and then connection to resources. Once we know that they're stable with their basic needs, we can connect them with different resources to help bring them out of poverty. So our programs, we have 9, and that was a lot for me, especially coming from an organization that only had 1 before I was working for HopeLink. 9 programs, that is a lot. And unfortunately, it still doesn't cover everything that many times people in our community may need. Luckily, we have a lot of partnerships with different organizations, whether they need assistance with medical, mental health challenges, or challenges with children. We have a lot of partners within our community that we can point them to from if our programs are not adequate enough for what they may be going through when they come to us. So we have food assistance. I believe that might be the one you might know best. Our food markets, our food banks, there are 5 major ones surrounding all of King County. And I don't know if you've been in there recently, or I guess technically volunteers are allowed back in, yes. But they are in a grocery store model. That's not a lineup of putting things in their bags and out you go. We have aisles. We have grocery carts. HopeLink comes from a trauma-informed lens when we're trying to work with our clients. We want them to be able to walk through there with their children. And many times our clients might feel ashamed if they're coming, if it looks more or less like a handout. The dignity of our clients is one of our top priorities when we're working with them. So having those aisles where they can pick things off the shelves, having volunteers at the checkout where they can put things on there to be bagged so that they can leave, having a place where they can put their cart, all little things that you can do at Fred Meyer's, that you can do at QFC, that you can do at Safeway, we try to implement in our grocery store model as well. We have employment services. And this is what I was talking about in terms of we have many volunteers who come and help, who donate their time to assist with financial management. Many of my donors might be a doctor or a lawyer. Being able to give that time to assist in what's the reality of what that career path looks like. I always say, too, just because our client's first job might be working in the food industry or the retail industry doesn't mean that they don't have a dream of what their career is going to be one day. It could be within those services. But just like us, all of our clients have dreams as well. So we have a lot of opportunities for them to get connected with a lot of different organizations that are providing jobs in this area. Unfortunately, of course, many of our clients, maybe many like many of your family members or friends, did lose their jobs at the beginning of the pandemic. So we're trying to recover from that right now. Financial assistance. This is a big one. And there's one area I'd like to talk about, which is called financial shock. We don't only at HopeLink, we don't just focus on people exiting poverty. It's trying to prevent them from slipping into poverty in the first place. Let's say you need that car repair. Let's say you lost your job. Through financial shock, if your car breaks down, we're able to work with not the client directly in giving them money, but work with the business that they may need to be paid for that car to be repaired? Are they going to lose their job if they're not going to? And so essentially that financial shock, we upped it in 2020 from $1,500 to $3,000 a year per individual or per family for when they have those moments where they may not have those savings to fix their car. And that is one example of how you can help prevent someone from slipping into that poverty cycle. Housing. As you know, or we have five different housing units, all similarly, all connected next to or near our food centers, our service centers. We provide transitional housing. So people who know that they're just only going to be in there for a short period of time. We provide emergency housing, and we provide permanent housing. We do provide permanent housing, and we also, through that, are having case managers helping them with job resources, helping them find jobs, helping them with resume building. The goal of Hopeling, as I said, was to provide self-sufficiency in helping our clients exit poverty. Our goal is hoping that they can use our programs, use our resources, and then they're well-equipped with the skills and life skills that they need to go on their own within our world. And through that housing, once they do find jobs, we do have subsidized rent. So 30% of your paycheck would go to help, to support that rent, to show them building up a responsibility of themselves to be able to provide income towards that housing as well. We have transportation, so non-emergency medical transportation, as I said, through Medicaid. And then we have buses that pick people up, transportation straight to people's houses so that we can take them either to doctor's appointments, to their jobs, or to bus routes. And that is, all, as I said, all through Snohomish and King County. Adult education, English for work. Many of you might be familiar with ESL. But this is a focus on, and again, a lot of volunteers who help with this, language that is specific to resume building, to job interviews, to areas where they can be familiar and familiarized with language that, you know, may not be taught in a regular ESL program. It's really trying to equip them with the tools they need to assist themselves in perhaps finding work. We have financial capabilities. This is where I was talking about meeting with our case managers who help them learn how to build savings. Many of our clients have no savings at all. And learning how to equip them with the skills they need to put money away for their retirement, teaching them what Social Security is. These are all things that may sound simple to us, but it can be extremely daunting for many of our clients to even know where to begin, especially if you say you're in your 30s, 40s, 50s, and you have a few children. Energy assistance, utility bills. You may see one of our biggest appeals, Lend a Hoping Hand. In the wintertime, utility bills are huge, right? Keeping the heat on. Just recently, you know, my father is a pastor over in Pittsburgh. They're trying to raise funds for utility bills. Members of their community in Pittsburgh dying from hypothermia, people who are homeless dying from hypothermia, or their housing. They literally were able to keep the bills on and no one knew. That's how critical some of these can be. Being able to keep the lights on, being able to keep the heat on. So we help with providing utility direct money to the utility, right, to Seattle Utilities, not directly to the client, but enabled to help keep their heat on as well. Family development. This is around assisting with not just learning skills on how to be a new parent at a time, but it's assisting with finding housing that's big enough for the entire family, finding assistance with school supplies for children. And also think about it, in the summertime when children are in school, a lot of times parents don't may not be thinking about that money they need to buy that extra food, right? Not knowing about that extra food in the summer when that child isn't in public school. So it's being able to work through them and understanding as well, how much do you think this child is going to be costing you this year? Let's try and work out a plan that we can assist, because it's not just sometimes the mother or father or the single parent. The children are also being thrown in this situation at a young age, or whatever situation they may be coming to. So these are all the nine areas that our case managers work in. And it's a lot. And there's even more that I could go into, but I also want to say, I'm also wanting to make sure that we have enough time to get through everything. And you guys will have access to this PowerPoint moving forward. this slide very much goes over what I was just speaking about, but it breaks down the programs that help achieve stability and then the programs that help clients become equipped to exit poverty. As I was showing you before, you need to have stability before you can exit poverty. You can't just expect someone who doesn't have a house to be able to get a job. You can't expect someone who can't pay for the bills to be able to perhaps come in and learn and be financially literate. So it's making sure that they have the stability they need before we can assist with helping, partnering with them to exit poverty. So one thing that's great, and these numbers are a little old only because our new impact annual report is coming out in a month. So these are numbers that I'm going to go through just very quickly in areas just to see the impact that many of you may have made, but our community and coming together to provide for our clients. And these numbers are from 2020 and the beginning of 2021. We were able to distribute over 123,000 boxes. We had to move to a box model because of COVID beginning. We had to follow protocols, which we are now hopefully changing back to that food market model. On average, 2,439 boxes were distributed, almost 2.5 million meals provided in 2020. Energy assistance, 5.8 million in heating assistance for over 4,600 households. Financial assistance, almost 1.8 million provided to 850 households in our community. And in order to better meet the need, we moved it to a maximum annual total of assistance of 3,000. That's what I was talking to you about, the financial shock of all of a sudden I've lost everything and I need some money to at least keep me in, to pay my mortgage this month. Housing, we housed 120 families. The average length of stay just under 2 years. 89% exited to greater housing stability by the end of 2020, which was amazing for us, especially due to the pandemic. Family development, 115 houses served. 100% of houses exited with stable housing, and that is amazing. Being able to serve 115 households where they exited with stable housing. So that means before they exited to stable housing, they were behind in their bills. They were not able to pay their mortgage or their rent. And so being able to work with them with their families specifically to exit stable housing, that doesn't mean they moved per se. It means that now they have stability in where they currently are housed. Employment, 170 participants served, 39 job placements. That 39, very much because of the pandemic. Very difficult to find jobs that were even open at the time for many of our clients to find work in. I mean, no one was hiring. If you remember back in March, in 2020, everyone was losing their jobs. Adult education, English for work, 155 students served, and 63 GED high school students served. So we do GED training for people who have not been able to finish high school. And then financial capabilities, 74 participants coached, 158 financial consultations, 17 workshops provided with community partners. Again, that is all about learning how to manage your money once you do have money, or what money do you have? Let's see how we can responsibly take care of that. Transportation, we have bus routes with 20 bus routes with 1.2 miles traveled, almost 400,000 rides, and it goes on and on. I'm going to skip through these here. We've seen this here. Last year, we served 57,000 people at service centers through transportation services and HopeLink housing. Now, again, those are just between those two services. There's other data that we actually don't collect for the privacy and assistance of our clients. Volunteers. In 2020, over 1,800 volunteers served over 47,000 hours helping people and changing lives, the equivalent of almost 23 full-time employees. HopeLink volunteers outnumber paid staff 5-1. And now there was a 45% drop in volunteers due to the pandemic. Typically over 3,500 volunteers donate their time and skills. When I first started, it was over 4,000 volunteers. Without volunteers, the life and blood of our work could not be done. We keep our costs for employees at a minimum because we have such a great connection with our community and the support from our community. Yeah, thank you for your support. This has been a challenging but great 2 years. And I say great because, as I said at the beginning, the generosity of our community has been astronomical. I mean, it has been incredible to see our community come together to assist and partner with other members of our community, our clients at HopeLink. It's been very challenging, but we have seen an influx of support in more ways than just monetary. Support of food, support of people giving clothes that they can donate to other organizations that we partner with. The money that we receive at HopeLink from individual donations, 100% of that money goes directly to programs. Doesn't go to paying me. Doesn't go to keeping our lights on in our building. 100% goes directly to our programs, which goes directly to our clients. So now I know we have a little bit of time. I did apologize to Susan. I said I can be a little long-winded. But I just want to see if anyone had any questions that I could possibly answer. Any questions I might not be able to answer today, I'd be happy to get those answers to Susan. I just wanted to see if anyone had any questions or comments. I appreciate your question. So I should be more specific in that. I mean, HopeLink has a budget in total of roughly $70 million. That includes federal grants. That includes different corporate grants. It includes different areas of income. The area that I work in specifically is in individual giving. So that is direct donations from individuals, maybe much like yourselves if you've ever given to HopeLink. That all of that money, the budget that I run, which is roughly I'm in charge of $5.2 million, but the total budget is roughly $7.5 million that program needs directly from us to be able to provide what they need for different areas of the program. I just like to include that because I do, of course, receive a salary for working at HopeLink, but that is through different grants and a different pool of money, I should say. It's critical to us that the money that our donors give to us, our volunteers provide, that we're very transparent about where that money is going to. And not only that, but you can specifically say where you want that money to go to, what program you want it to go to, what food bank. Like if you wanted to go to food assistance in Bellevue, you can provide that information for us to immediately direct that to that location. Mm-hmm. So we're in charge of $7.5 million. That's just direct income. Or a direct revenue from individuals. We have, as I said, federal grants and other grants alike that help provide other areas of revenue for HopeLink to stay up and running in our community. Well, that's a great question. I mean, that is a perfect example of how someone can easily, it just takes one pull of the string for something to completely unravel in somebody's life. Luckily, that $3,000 I was talking about were offset costs that were one-off situations. They can still receive funding through all of our programs. So every area that you had just spoken about, through utilities, through housing, through job referrals, through food. They can have access to all of our programs.
Yeah, yeah.
That 3,000 I was talking about was specifically a one-off financial shock that they weren't prepped for. So we would assume that our case managers are working with them through building out a budget. This is how much your rent is every month, or your mortgages. This is how much, you know, your utilities are. It's helping to build out a budget for our donors. And then they get in a car crash. Well, we don't have car auto services at HopeLink. We have transportation, but sometimes that transportation isn't going to be sufficient enough for what their needs are. So it is providing that money every year to, let's say, that auto mechanic to fix their car. Or it's not just cars. I always use that as an example.
Yeah.
But it could be a fire in their house.
Yeah.
That completely destroyed, and they don't have renter's insurance, or they don't have house insurance. That $3,000 is just specifically for one-off occurrences that perhaps our programs can't assist in. So you can be in our housing units while going to our food markets, while also meeting with case managers to talk about resume building and GED training, while also focusing on learning how to build maybe family skills in providing food for your children over the summer months. So it's not just you have access to all of our programs, not just one. But what we find is that many of our clients may just need help for that month. Maybe they do have a house. Maybe they do have a car and a job. But let's say that their hours got cut because of COVID. That's when they can come to our food bank, our food markets, and receive that food. We meet the client where they're at, and we work and partner with them until they no longer need our services and are fully self-sufficient. Yeah, so that's a great question. We do see that the numbers that I showed you in terms of job placements was 39 in 2020. That was very much due to the pandemic. What we're seeing now is an influx of our clients who are finding jobs again. Again, this is also, though, we are working with our clients to, you know, they understand, many people understand, right? I understood this too. I think maybe some of us were in these situations at one point in our life where, like, I just need a job right now to pay the bills, and then I want to focus on my career as we move forward. That's very much a mindset that many of our case managers have, where let's just see what we can do, what's sustainable for you right now, and then let's work on where you want to see what direction you want to see your life go in terms of your work. So we are seeing an influx of our clients have access to jobs. I don't actually have the numbers of what that looks like yet, but I'll have them next month, and it would be easy for me to send over our impact report digitally or hard copies to you if you'd like to see those numbers, because I think they're going to be at least, I would say, especially in that area, 2-3 times higher than what they were the year before. But yeah, I'd say our programs are bringing all of our data together right now, but I don't have the exact numbers for you. Yeah. Great question. So the exact number of clients that we have hired at HopeLink, I don't have that exact number, but I can get it to you. But I can tell you that many of my colleagues were once clients of HopeLink. We do hire. And a really good point something I like to point out too is like our board. Our board is a trifecta of a third of public servants. So for instance, like the mayor of Redmond, this is on there, or the CFO of Microsoft. Also on there, but then a third is also clients. We make sure to try and have an equitable lens of bringing our clients in on our board, to serve on our board. They're either clients or were once clients, of HopeLink. And how we've changed in the pandemic, I mean, goodness, those of us who, for instance, in admin, we were sent home to work from home because we had the privilege to be able to do that. The main reason we were doing that too is, for instance, we have a 24-hour, 24/7 call service for our clients to be able to call in with whatever assistance they may need. Well, that's actually located at the Bellevue Service Center. We all had to go home not just because it was you know, it was safer for us to do so. But all of those call center individuals moved over to our desks because there was more space in Redmond than there was in Bellevue. Being able to provide services to our clients could not stop, though. So we had to learn to adapt. I gave you one example that at the food market, we had to move to a food box in a setting where we couldn't even let volunteers bring in food, because at that time we thought COVID was spread tremendously through contact through the hands, not just through the mouth and the nose. So we were constantly adapting in our food market situation and how we were getting food out to clients. But the thing we knew is that we could not stop. We couldn't stop. If anything, we had more members of our community coming to us. Our case managers, they may not have been able to meet in the office with clients anymore. So, like I said, they had to find neutral spots and locations where they could meet with clients at a safe distance to be able to work through this. Sometimes that always couldn't happen. So it was being able to see if they could do virtual, if they had, excuse me, the privilege of, like many of us might have technology, but meet through their phones or meet through a computer. Our transportation services never changed. They never stopped. It was obviously mask mandates, things like that. I should just say many of the employees at HopeLink knew the risks that they were taking, and there were just areas that couldn't be changed in terms of we needed to make sure that our clients were getting to their medical appointments. We needed to make sure that we could pick them up. So it was taking risks at different times while following, of course, the state laws. But we made adjustments, and now hopefully we're moving back to we're starting to move back to a model that's going to be even more effective for our clients in this year. Hopefully that answers your question. Great. Well, if there isn't any other questions, I know we're a little bit over time, and I want to make sure to make sure that everyone can make it on time for church. But thank you so much for having me. It's been great coming here. I apologize if some of this information was a little dry. I just wanted to try and give a total encompass of what HopeLink does on a general statement. You know, there's a lot of areas within our programs that you can get into pretty intricate details. But I'm happy to answer any questions if you have any. I'm sure Susan can get in contact with me. And if you're ever interested in volunteering or knowing more about HopeLink, I can always point you in the right direction for that as well. But yeah, thank you so much for having me, and thank you for your time.
Thank you, Kenny. That was a wonderful presentation, and we certainly appreciate you coming and spending the time with us today.
Yeah, thank you very much.